You gotta fan him at home.
Yeah, exactly.
What?
Why? Of course, Eminem.
Are they
going
to speak?
They
are. Okay.
I mean, that's impersonal. Just doesn't want to be in the same room with us. I get it.
It's Allison. She said she was tired of me. So.
He's on a list and he's teaching in first class. It's a hybrid.
Okay, the meeting of the Planning and Zoning Board for the City of Winter Park for March 2nd. 2021 shall come to order. Let me begin by stating that the purpose of the Planning and Zoning Board is to review and make a recommendation on conditional uses, subdivisions, comprehensive plan amendments, land development code amendments, rezonings, and other ordinances affecting the development of property, and to make final decisions on applications for lakefront home approval. Any decision regarding lakefront homes under the City Code Section 58-87 is under the purview of this board, and the board's vote is a final decision that will not be heard by the City Commission. The City Commission will consider the board's recommendations made tonight and other public hearing items on Wednesday, March 24th, 2021 at 3:30 p.m. or soon thereafter as may be heard. And the City Commission will make a final decision on such matters. You're encouraged to keep apprised on the status of such matters going before the City Commission by reviewing the city's website and upcoming City Commission meeting agendas. The meeting will proceed as follows. The Chair of Staff will announce each public hearing item as it appears on the agenda, which is available outside the front door. Staff will begin by making a presentation on each item and will provide the staff's recommendation. Next, we'll hear from the applicant. After that, the floor will be open to the public or for anyone to speak in support of or opposition to the request. After public comment, the applicant will be given an opportunity to respond to the public comments. Please approach the podium and state your name and address for the record. With the exception of ordinances proposing comprehensive plan amendments and land development code amendments, the public hearing matters coming before the board are mostly quasi-judicial in nature. For quasi-judicial matters, the board considers the testimony and evidence record at the hearing and determines whether the applicable criteria for approval have been met. The testimony that you give to the board should be fully truthful in the same manner as if you were giving sworn testimony in a court of law. In the interest of time, we ask that each person appearing before the board limit their comments to one appearance of 3 minutes. Large groups are asked to name a spokesperson. We ask that your testimony be relevant to the public hearing matter on which you are speaking and avoid repeating arguments and testimony made by yourself or others. Order and decorum will be preserved at all times. Please address all your comments to the board and not to the audience. After all public input, the public comment period will be closed. The board members will then discuss and we will vote on a recommendation to the City Commission with any conditions that may be appropriate. Please turn off or silence all mobile devices during these public hearings. The first item of business is the approval of the February 2nd, 2021 meeting minutes. Do we have a second?
I'll second.
Roll call, Mary.
Mr. Spencer?
Yes.
Dr. James?
Yes.
Mr. Bornstein?
Yes.
Dr. Bice?
Yes.
Mr. Fitch?
Yes.
Vice Chair Turner?
Yes.
And Chairman Johnston?
Yes. Motion passes unanimously. Okay. On to our First item, CU21-02, Jeff.
Yeah, okay. So the first item on our agenda, and really the only item of significance on our agenda, is a conditional use request to redevelop the property at 1915 South Lakemont Avenue, which is 1.28 acres of land, not including any water, that is zoned R2. I'm sure everybody is, if you can click, familiar with the overall general neighborhood location, and zooming in a little closer with the next slide, a little closer view aerial that we may come back to, but we are flicking to the next one, which is the zoning map. And you see the orange color of this property, as well as the orangey color of the properties to the north and south that front on Lakemont Avenue. Those properties are zoned R2. That's what this property is zoned. Under our R2 code, it would allow a density based on maximum 10 units to the acre, or 1.28 acres, would allow a maximum of 12 units to be developed on this property. They're requesting 10. And you see that it abuts to the west, the single family neighborhood around Lake Spear. It's important to point out that that R2 zoning has been in place since the 1950s. And so it's really just happenstance that through all those years since then, there's only been one single family house on this property. It goes back in the 50s or in the 60s or the 70s, they could have built 10 or 12 apartments on this property. And then a redevelopment, a tear down, a rebuild would be less of a change to the neighbors. They, meaning the current owner as well as the previous owner, have had the right to build apartments, condominium, townhouses on this property, as I said, since the 1950s. And in Florida, there are strong property rights rules that you can use your property in accordance with the zoning that you have. Just as if you are a single family homeowner, you can build on your single family lot according to the zoning rules. And if you are an R2 property owner, you can do the same. And amongst those rules of what is permitted, townhomes, townhouses are permitted as a development type in the R2 zoning. So if people think that this is a hearing tonight to decide whether or not they can use the property for townhomes, that's not what this is, because they can develop this property with townhomes. So it is a use, this is a conditional use. The use that they're asking for is allowed. It is a conditional use, meaning that we can place conditions upon the approval of a project. Need to change something in the site plan, you need to put some conditions of approval to change this or that or impose restrictions, then we can do that. If this property were still in Orange County, because you know, it was the 1990s when all this got annexed into the city, they would be building this project right now, because in Orange County, you could go down, get a building permit, build this project without any public hearings. But in the city of Winter Park, we are much more inclusive of the public, and we want to hear what people think about things, and we want to learn, because perhaps there are aspects of a project that can be improved or conditioned. And that's really the purpose of the meeting tonight, is to find out if there are aspects of the development that can be approved. The purpose is not, as in Roman days, up or down, whether it can be built or not, because townhomes, as I said, are permitted under that zoning. Since we only have one item on the agenda, I'm going to take some time and walk through the various aspects of the site plan as education for the board members, as well as for the neighbors who have come. put up the site plan. The Planning and Zoning Board, and I'm sure the neighbors, are concerned and interested in what's happening with respect to the trees that were on the property. I will tell you that before this applicant purchased the property, he met with our staff from Urban Forestry. Any of the trees that have been removed already have been permitted to be removed by the city. There are no other removals that are planned on this site. So anything with regards to trees has already been approved by the city. As you also probably know, this sort of project cannot work on septic tanks, which is how the neighborhood to the west is served. They are bringing in a sewer line to serve this project. It is connecting across Lakemont Avenue into what's called a force main, because they are pumping the sewage in that line under force. And so on this site, there will be a collection system, a pipe from each of these units that will take the sewage to a location out by Lakemont Avenue, where there will be an underground holding tank of sorts with pumps in it that then will pump the sewage under pressure across the street and into the system. But the lift station and anything associated with it is along Lakemont Avenue and is in no proximity to any of the single family homes that exist to the west. They are also needing to provide an upgrade to the water system and to provide a fire hydrant on site in the hoped for, never need for extinguishing a fire. And so there will be a water main upgrade, new fire hydrant installed on the property. As a new development, they are also going to have to build a state-of-the-art stormwater retention system for this project, because what preserves the health of the lakes is to minimize to the extent one can any of the rainfall runoff and what is collected in that rainfall runoff, which is leaves and twigs and all that organic debris, from getting into the lakes, because it's that organic debris, it's our beautiful leaves from our oak trees, that once they get in the lake and decompose are the food for the aquatic plants and the other issues that one has with respect to the lake water quality. Neighborhoods to the west have no stormwater retention system. Glenridge has no stormwater retention system. This lake has excellent water quality because of the limited number of streets that drain into the lake. And so when this project is built with their stormwater system, none of that initial water will go into the lake either. Because as you see on the site plan, both on the top area by Lake Spear and on the bottom area down by Lake Compton, there are stormwater retention areas. So when it rains, all the water goes to that area and collects, sinks down through the soil, and does not spill any of that water into the lakes. It is designed to meet the city standard. It is designed to meet the standards of the St. John's River Water Management District. And it is designed basically as a state-of-the-art facility to maintain the health of the lakes. Is it possible that under some scenario, some of that water would get into the lake, would overflow those structures? It is possible, because there are two scenarios where that can happen. And number one is when we have a hurricane, because you cannot design a system to accommodate the kind of inches of water that we get during a hurricane event. And the only other time that potentially happens is in this event called August, because you know in August, we get torrential downpours every afternoon and we can get 6, 8, sometimes 10 inches of rain in a month, and there isn't enough time for all of that between the daily events to soak down. But what happens when the water flows into these areas is all of the heavier items, the leaves, twigs, and everything, sinks to the bottom. So any of the water that does spill into the lake is the top water, which is the cleanest of the water that goes into the areas. And this is, I keep using the term state of the art, but it is. And so the city, as well as the developer, is making sure that this project does not impair the health of Lake Spear or Lake Compton in any degree. And that is the way it has been designed. The applicant wants to use the lakes in a very minimal way as an amenity for the people that live in this project. If you buy a townhome in this project, you are buying the home, you are buying the dirt under it, but the rest of the area is common area, accessible to all the residents. So if you're a resident, you can walk down in front of the lakefront townhomes, down and look at Lake Compton, and look at Lake Spear. And so the developer is planning to have one dock or perhaps gazebo on Lake Spear so that the residents have the opportunity to walk down to the lake shore, sit there, look at the lake, enjoy a glass of wine, and just partake in the beauty of the lake. They're also talking about having a very small finger dock next to it, because the only kind of boats that are going to come from this development into Lake Spear are canoes or kayaks or paddle boards. And in terms of getting into a kayak or getting onto a paddle board, having that little small finger dock will help in terms of access. And it's the same story with respect to Lake Compton. If you wanted to walk down to the lake edge, rather than stand in the grass or in the dirt, there'll be a small dock right there on the lake's edge, so you could have a place to stand or sit and look at the lake. There will be no boats on this lake from this project, other than what I mentioned, kayaks and canoes. There will be no motorized craft of any kind on Lake Spear. There will be no boat ramp. The only thing that you will see is someone on a paddleboard, someone in a kayak, perhaps. That will be the extent of the use of Lake Spear by the residents of this project. If the board would look at the location of those lakefront units, you'll see the distance that they are back from the water. They are back behind, if I flip back to the aerial, the two adjacent homes. So they are not blocking any views of the lakes from the adjacent single family homes because they are further back on the lakes. Let's switch gears a second and talk about traffic, because this project will have no access, no traffic access at all out to Lake Spear Drive. If we did, it would be cut through city. It can't be allowed. The neighbors would never stand for it. The city's not going to permit it. The developer doesn't want it either. And so the only in and out from this project with a vehicle is in and out to Lakemont Avenue. And the traffic generation for single family homes is the lowest of any kind of land use type. If you think about it, it's people going to work, coming home at night. It's someone taking a child to school and coming back. It's someone going to the grocery store and coming back. The projection is 52 daily trips from this development in and out to Lakemont Avenue. Lakemont carries 6,000 cars a day up and down this stretch of Lakemont. It's much higher volumes once you get north of Glenridge. So the amount of cars that will come out of this project are the same that go by this site in 15 minutes. In terms of putting it in context, all of the traffic from all day long is what you see go by this site 15 minutes during any given day, given the traffic that's out there. So the traffic generation is really insignificant on Lakemont. And as I said, it is non-existent into the neighborhood to the west. In terms of trash pickup, not going to be any trash trucks going into this project, not going to be any dumpsters inside this project. You're not going to hear anything. You're going to have the green carts. They're going to roll them out to Lakemont Avenue. And the garages are sized to be big enough to put your cart inside the garage. And so Waste Pro is going to go down the street and it's going to pick up the tin cans. And no one is going to hear any dumpsters clanging, and there's not going to be any issues with refuse vehicles into the site. They can't go into the site because they can't turn around. And so that's why all the trash pickup is going to be out on Lakemont Avenue. In terms of parking, our code says you've got to provide two spaces for every unit. Every unit has a two-car garage. And you're going to provide a half a space per unit for visitor. So you got to provide five spaces on site. They're providing the five spaces required on site. There are some other little areas where you will be able to sneak a car in that's not shown on the plan. If you're coming to visit someone, you can park lengthwise in front of their garage, not interfere with any of the traffic flow. You can see up front on the plan that there's a little area right when you come in off the driveway, sneak another car or two. You can park along Lakemont Avenue by pulling off the street. But of course, the easiest scenario for anyone is going to be just to park across the street at our dog park, because there are parking spaces on the north end within 100 feet of this site. And because those spaces are the furthest away from the beach and the other dog areas, they're the last ones to fill up. So if the residents in here have a book club meeting once a year and they have 10 people show up, they can park on site. They can park across the street at the park. If someone has grandpa and grandma in here have a birthday party and they have people show up, they can park across the street because they're not going to be able to access the adjacent residential neighborhood of Lake Spear Drive. So there's going to be no overflow parking issues to the west at all that's going to negatively impact those neighbors. And how that access is prohibited is because there is going to be a gate across the street front of the project. And let me flick ahead to show you a picture of that. If you can move the slides for me as we go through these other plans. Here's a look of the gate. And the issue with the fire department, which will respond obviously to fires, but in today's world, 95% of their calls are medical emergency response, heart attack or other medical emergency. And there are some periods of the day when the traffic is so light on Lakemont that they would be able to back out, but there are most of the periods of the day when the traffic is so heavy it is unsafe for them to back out. And so this gate will be blocking all access into this project from Lake Spear Drive. There will be a lock on the gate. Next slide, please. And only the fire department is going to have a key to that lock. The HOA will not have a key to that lock. Nobody that lives in this project will have a key to that lock, except our fire department. They need to get out with a heart attack issue. They slide the gate open. They go out and head up to Winter Park Hospital. That's the only time that you will ever see that gate open is for the exit of fire and emergency vehicles. How many times does that happen? Well, think about the 10 homes that are closest to you where you live. How many times you've seen a fire department ambulance pull up to do a medical emergency in front of one of those 9-10 homes? That's how often, hopefully less, that the fire department will need to come in and use that gate. And so that is something that is part of the of our life safety codes. It has to happen, and it's all about safety of the fire personnel as well as the occupants in the trucks, which you know are large vehicles in terms of backing out onto the project, out onto the streets. Now, what a lot of people are very rightly concerned about in any of these projects that we see is the impacts from construction activities. So we are lucky in this sense that this is not lots where individual builders are going to pull down lots and build them at different time sequence. This is going to be one developer who is going to build all of the infrastructure in the very beginning with the first permit. So they're going to come in, do the paving, do the water line, do the sewer, create the retention areas. So any erosion or runoff during the construction period is captured in those retention areas, put up the gate and be able to work through the process of the infrastructure first, and then build all of the buildings all at one time. The developer applicant is going to put up a 6-foot tall construction fence all the way along the western property line. So no construction people will be able to park on Lake Spear Drive unless they're excellent fence climbers. There can't be any deliveries through that fence. We will require what's called a construction management plan that dictates exactly how the deliveries will be made, where the construction workers will park. When there's multiple contractors, it's difficult to police. With one builder, it's much easier to police because they're getting all their block delivered at once. They're getting all their trim people come in at once. It's much easier to contain. But again, they're not going to park on the neighborhood streets because they're not going to be able to get into the job site. There's going to be parking on site. Is going to be parking across the street in the park during the construction period. So there should be no construction impacts at all on the neighborhood to the west. When we look at these projects, we always look at compatibility of what they're proposing with respect to what is surrounding. We say compatibility, we don't say it has to be identical because we don't have identical zoning. We have single family on one side, we have R2 here. R2 permits townhouses, as I've said before. So it's not going to be identical, but what's important are the characteristics of this development going to be similar to what each and every of the single family homeowners can build. And in this case, they are in that respect, almost identical because this zoning and this project has a 2-story height limit. The neighboring single family homes have a 2-story height limit. This project's capped at 30 feet of height. Single family homes actually can go to 35 feet in height. In terms of actual mass, actual size of the buildings, the way we control that is through a tool called floor area ratio, a percentage of the land. So on a single family home, it's 43%. have a 10,000 square foot lot. 43% is a 4,300 square foot home. And this townhouse development has a 45% FAR maximum, a tiny bit bigger, but basically comparable and compatible with the size that everyone else can build on their own individual single family homes. And these are homes. I mean, they are townhomes. The only difference is that they have a common wall with a neighbor, but they are homes that you own fee simple. There is an HOA that they will need to pay dues to. The HOA will maintain all the grounds, landscaping, maintain the retention areas, maintain the docks, do all of those features both while the developer is in control and after the developer is gone. The 10 homeowners will manage that HOA to have common maintenance of all the facilities. The board, as you know from getting those last two emails from me, has got a whole bunch of emails from neighbors. They have a lot of concerns about the dramatic change to this property. They've been had it very nice all these years, even though it was R2, only one single family home was sitting on the property. Never heard a peep out of the home. But really, there should not be hardly any changes whatsoever. I know there's concern about not knowing about changes. You know, our planning and zoning board has to deal with concerns of neighbors every month. But for the neighbors nearby, this is a brand new thing for you, that something new is happening at the end of your neighborhood. We've had some here at on the board, had some doozies lately. We've had the 32,000 square foot medical building of Skycraft and those traffic impacts into the neighborhood. We've had the Paco's redevelopment of a larger office building and that traffic concern in the neighborhood. I don't even want to touch on Henderson Hotel and what you heard from those neighbors. And then just recently we talked about Orchard Supply and not much change to the building, but when you got McLaren automobiles coming out of it, rightly there was some concern from those neighbors. And all those instances really had something in common, is that they were all bigger, but they all generated more traffic. And so what we have here is bigger, but it's not generating any traffic that's going to negatively affect the adjacent residential area because they can't get there. And these homes that are being built, your new neighbors are going to be people much like you. These are going to be homes that are priced in the 800,000 to 1 million or more for the lakefronts. And the people that are buying that 800,000 and up home tend to be retired individuals who are downsizing, folks who are moving to Florida from out of state. They tend to be successful business people who want to live in this really prime location. You are in Winter Park, you are close to Baldwin Park, you have a beautiful park across the street from you. You have Glen Ridge Middle, you have Audubon or Lake Baldwin Elementary, you got Winter Park High School. I mean, this is an ideal location for those types of users. This is not going to be a scenario where any of these homes are rental properties. There's not going to be party crowds in here. No one can pay $800,000 for a home and try to rent it for $6,000 a month to college students. That's not the kind of residence that you are going to get next to you. You are going to get residents very much like yourselves. So as the board has read, the staff recommendation is for approval. Why is it for approval? Because as I said before, this is R2 property where they are entitled to build townhomes. Personally, I do not see any negative impacts from this development on the neighborhood to the west. They're not getting any traffic, not one car. They are not getting any construction impacts, not one delivery, not one construction worker. They are not getting any impact on the lakes because we have a state-of-the-art stormwater retention system. These buildings, as I said, are the same size as the homeowners can build themselves in terms of floor area ratio, same height. And they actually have greater setbacks, 35 feet versus 10 feet from the western property line. So they're further away from the homes to the west than anyone would have to be on lots that live to the west. So I know I've taken a bunch of time, but I wanted to touch on a lot of these specific details because many of them were outlined in the emails that we've received. So let me see if there are questions for staff now. Then, as is our procedure, we will turn it over to the applicant. They will explain more about the project, and then the floor will be open to the public to make the comments that they might have to the board. So let me see if there's any questions from the P&Z board.
I have a couple. The trash pickup. So is that something that's baked into the way that this is going to be set up so that they are using cans, or how is that being?
It's baked into the size of the garage, and if you drill down even into the floor plan of the garage, there's even a little nook in the garage where they will stick the can.
But it doesn't have to be a condition or anything. That's just part of this.
It doesn't, because we are not allowing any kind of dumpster refuse collection on the property.
Okay. And the dog park is the City of Winter Park's park?
Correct.
So it's okay to use it for parking?
You can, and even though it is daylight to sunset, you can, if you live in one of these townhomes and you say, I'm having a birthday party and I'm gonna have some friends park over there, call the police department. As long as they know who these cars are, then they'll make those accommodations.
Okay. And then the landscape plan that's in here provides a buffer between the existing neighborhood. What are they obligated from the development side? Do they have to build it per this?
Yep, they have to build it per the, all these approvals are plan specific. They've given us a landscape plan. That's the landscape plan they have to put in. Developer can maybe tell you a little bit more details about the planting
types. But if we were to approve, the building department sees what we approved, and as long as it's this or better.
Yes, exactly.
If they come back and there's no trees, you're not getting a permit.
You got it. Okay. And you're not getting a CO if the plants aren't put in the way this plan shows.
I have a question for you, Jeff.
Okay.
Is there a gate into the Lake Spear Drive for people?
There was originally planned to be one, but in the community meeting that was held prior to this meeting, the neighborhood objected to that. So the developers agreed not to have a gate to go into that neighborhood. I think the reality is if you're riding your bike or walking, it's probably your destinations are probably to the east of the park, to the loop around Baldwin Park, than to go onto those residential streets, but they've agreed not to have one.
Thank you.
So is there any reason to edit the document that we have here that shows the gate for bike and walking, or there's a slide in at least the packet we got shows that?
So that has been the representations of the applicant. They can make them again verbally when they get up here, then that becomes part of the record, and or you can certainly include that as your conditions.
Jeff, can you pull back up the blueprints there?
I'm not sure why I stayed fixated on a lock. Yeah. Sorry.
Back. I trust you. That's a good lock.
Going back. Let's get it a little cleaner. Yep. There we go. Here's the cleanest plan.
Is there adequate turnaround for cars that get down in there that may not want to be in there? And are they able to get out without pulling into someone's driveway to do a 7-point turn to get out?
Yes, there's enough. So if for some reason you realize you need to get turned around, I mean, you can pull up nose of your car against either of those two garages, north or south, back up, and then turn your car around and get out. Of course, if any of the visitor spaces are open, which presumably they might be, you could pull into one of those and then back out and then head back out to Lakemont.
Okay.
Jeff, what is the actual floor area ratio? We don't see the size of these buildings.
They are using the 45% permitted floor area ratio. The applicant will explain, I believe around 2,500 square feet each of the units, but I think the applicant has a finger better on the pulse of the exact sizes. Let him answer that.
Okay, thank you.
Anything else for Jeff? Okay, thanks. Would the applicant like to come up, address the board? Please state your name, address for the record.
Shane Acevedo, 1817 Lockberry Road, Winter Park. So I'm actually about 5 minutes from the site. I am the applicant, the developer. I'm the sole owner of the entity that owns the property. We don't have this under contract. It's actually owned by me. Back in November, I got an opportunity, to purchase this property that was presented to me, and I fell in love with it. It's a fantastic piece of property. In my opinion, it's one of the last really quality, good piece of lakefront community. You know, it's not a piece of property where there's a lot of homes on the street that are on the lake. This is a self-contained community. That's our perspective of what we're going to develop. If you ask anybody if they know where the property is, they typically say, I didn't even know that was back there. And then you mention the dog park across from there, and that's how they get their directions on it. We originally purchased the property. We met with the city, and then physically met with the city at the site. We had submitted a preliminary site plan to them. Originally, we had 11 units. As Mr. Briggs said, we could have presented a higher number of units than that. After we had the internal meeting with the developer and the city, we took everything into account. They weren't pushing us into anything. After the meeting, we sat back, we talked, and we reduced the number of units to ease the property, ease some tension into the property to make it more community-based. I have personally met with a few of the neighbors. We had a community meeting that lasted a couple hours. We got communicated to us what concerns were. We listened to those concerns, and we tried our best to alleviate any of the issues that would cause concern for the neighbors to the west. Change is tough. I get it. I understand it. We're not coming in. I'm going on the record. You're going to hear a lot of things. I'm going on the record. This is not public housing that we're developing or building. These buyers are stepped down. They sold their house for $2 million. They're waiting until the kids get out of college, and they just want to live in that community. These are high-end buyers. This is going to add the value that's added from this site is you've got Baldwin Park on the south. You've got the dog park across the street. You can jump on the trail. You can walk. You can jog. You've got Winter Park. You're still 10 minutes from Park Avenue. There's a lot of good things about this piece of property, and that's why we purchased it. I used to be on the variance board in the mid-2000s. So when I got this piece of property, spoke with our attorney, and we said, here's the four corners of the rule. We need to fall within this. No variances, anything, and that's what we've done. Additionally, after the initial meeting with the city, we had, if you look on the site plan, we had site planned it where we wanted a max value in front of the waterfront. We had three units clustered on both those where it's now just two units. The city did not ask us to move off of that after we got back after the staff meeting. We decided to move a unit from the most valued part of this property to where you see the three units on the building. Partly why we did that is to the north and south, those are actual multifamily properties. They're a little older, run down, but we moved the heavier density up close to the right to Lakemont, where it's zoned, currently zoned R2. And we left the two units that abut the single family property. The intention is to control, at the beginning when we had some construction going on, or demolishing the house, somebody entered through Lake Spear Road. Mr. Briggs contacted me. I was there in 5 minutes. I got with the contractor and we did our best to alleviate that from that point on. Understanding that that's a big issue, we are going to put a permanent construction fence along the boundary for Lake Spear Drive. No cars, and we will communicate it as me and as the local contractor. We're going to communicate with the subs that they enter through Lakemont, and we're going to do our best working with the city and abiding by our construction plan. Additionally, the neighbors off of Lake Spear Drive will have my personal phone number. They can contact me anytime there's issues going on there during construction. We're excited about the development. I know there's some consternation with the neighbors with the change. I always felt that we were good dancing partners with them because I'm open-minded, we're willing to listen and sort of help alleviate any of the consternation from change. So that's basically a summation of where we are with the development. We're excited to development, and we're excited to work with the city and work with the neighbors to the west.
Okay. Any questions for the applicant? Owen?
Yeah. Why did you decide that you wanted to do this as a townhouse development as opposed to a condominium? And it's a pretty distinctive ownership form. So you obviously reached that conclusion as a strategy for a particular purpose. Could you describe that to us, please?
I personally, I'm a small developer, typically do urban infill stuff, things like that. We found it more accepted for this, especially this type of high price range, that someone wants to own fee simple the property and not owned by the condo association. So go ahead.
Well, the reason I'm asking that is because we spent some time talking about the landscaping and these other things, and you yourself had mentioned the condition of the other properties, and I think functionally I agree with you. I think a lot of people do desire the full fee ownership. But is your HOA at this stage going to be responsible for all exterior maintenance, for all landscaping, for all these things that, at least in a condominium, would clearly be the responsibility of the condominium association?
All of the common areas. So the buyer comes in, they buy. There's an expectation disclosed to them of what the HOA fees will be on a monthly basis. Those are collected by the HOA. Within those HOA documents, the HOA documents governs what is typically all the irrigation, all of the landscaping, all of the common areas, any of the docks, any of the areas for paddleboarding, all of the lawn maintenance on a monthly basis will be governed by the HOA documents, and those funds will be used for that. So for example, even the irrigation will have a separate meter. So then that bill will go to the HOA for payment.
So it's fair to even assume then that perhaps the general care and maintenance of an individual unit, certainly the collective, might actually be better than some of the other homes in the neighborhood. Is that a
absolutely fair premise? Yes. So the HOA governs what somebody can do with their exterior on the paint, different things like that. It's got to all look similar, and they cannot go out of the rules of the HOA documents. So I would say, yes. I mean, even though fees are high on a monthly basis, you know, the landscaping that we're putting in is above and beyond just the typical code It'll be lush landscaping. So the fees are going to be on a higher basis because of those things. The HOA also takes care of the stormwater retention area. So this on a natural basis. So this is not something that is just going to go by the wayside, which a lot of times condo associations allow.
Well, I do have one additional question. It's on a slightly different subject. Jeff, if you describe this, I zoomed out, but in your staff report, there was some comment made about the possibility of extending sewer for the rest of the neighborhood. So this may be a question for the applicant, not necessarily you, I don't know. What kind of plan adjustments would be necessary if sewer opportunities were to be made beyond this property? And you did allude to that, but I don't know if that's been a discussion item.
So this project is not going to help or hurt the neighborhood, make it any easier, any harder for them to get sewer, because this isn't going to be the way they would get out. That lift station could never handle the flow from 60 homes, and it's a private lift station. Adding sanitary sewer to that neighborhood of 60 homes is about a $2 million project.
Right.
And it involves assessments and a whole bunch of complications that would take me 20 minutes to explain, but basically starts with 25% of the homeowners saying they want the city to explore it. And if we get that kind of petition, then we start doing that.
The only reason I'm bringing it up in this context specifically is you implement, you know, 10 new units here. If you had discussed that and there's been an express interest in doing it, regardless of how it's coordinated, this is one of those opportunities that one would see to ensure the quality remains in Lake Spear, I would think. It's not your problem. You're doing what you're supposed to do. So this is just an informational inquiry.
Yeah, I understand that it's not our problem, but you know, I listened to some of the neighbors about that. You know, we're doing, you know, it's not cheap bringing it's not cheap bringing sewer in, and having a lift station, and we're open. We're doing what we're supposed to do. Like with the landscaping, we're not worried about going above and beyond. You know, for example, the city staff has put a condition of no motorboats on the lake. I mean, that's a big deal, because everybody else on Lake Spear Drive, they can get out in a jet ski. So now you've got an HOA, you've got some people paying $800,000, $900,000 for a townhome, and they can't, but that's okay. That's part of this process. We adjust to it. Our vision was always just enjoying the lake. Again, this is a lakefront community. I don't envision people, teenagers on a Saturday, 10 teenagers getting out on a going skiing. That's not what we purchased the property for and what we're going to develop it for. It's more paddle boards, fishing, enjoying their property and the waterways, which is really what Winter Park is great about. You know, we want to enjoy the waterways, and that's what this community is. And that's why there will be strict HOA guidelines for the buyer.
I have one question.
Yes, sir.
You're going to be putting in the lift station?
Correct.
Is that going to be private? Is it going to be owned permanently by the HOA, or is it going to be dedicated to the city?
I'm going to leave that question up to my civil engineer, Kim, because I was a little, would you like her to come up and
private? It's private.
So, the only thing I would say, and I don't think it needs to be made a condition, but ideally you would have monitoring that is, connected, that is automatic monitoring with whoever is going to maintain the lift station, so that in the event of a backup or something, it doesn't interfere, horns don't go off, and it doesn't interfere with the residents.
So we'll take note of that. When we originally went in with the plans, we had a vision of roof deck, you know, patio, you know, we got backed off of that. We asked about a ramp. So this is not like the city hasn't done anything to protect the community there. But as a developer, I've learned, you know, you work with the city, you work with the neighbors to the extent possible. And that's where we are. And that's part of closing off. Am I a fan of closing off Lake Spear Road? No, but I don't want to cut through. So we really had the same concerns, the neighbors and us. You know, I don't want people cutting through. No one wants that. So it was just trying to get to a workable solution. I've seen the emails. I've heard we had the community meeting. So we know what some of the bigger concerns are, and we've been open to solving that.
Any other questions for the applicant? Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
This time, we'll open it up to the public to speak. If you'd like to step forward and address your name and address, I believe. Do we have anyone online tonight, Mary?
Yes, we have 15 attendees in the queue and 2 have registered to speak.
2, okay. If you'd like to speak, you can come up to the podium. Yes. And at the end, we will open it up for the online people to speak.
Good evening. My name is Debbie Ivy, and I live at 1841 Lake Spear Drive. I'm reading the public notice sent out by the city stating request of Lake Spear Development for conditional use approval. I'm understanding that the conditional use approval is based on consideration of City of Winter Park conditional codes criteria. I've read these codes over and over, and when you consider particularly sections 58 through 90, L1, CGL, I'm a bit baffled and concerned why the staff is recommending approval in these areas. We've provided factual data within these code definitions. We did just submit our neighborhood letters over the past week, so that could be why, but they came in kind of late. This development changes, as one of the code states, the integrity drastically with regard to safety, privacy, and possible home value decrease, especially to those neighbors in and around the end of Lake Spear, where access is now open, especially to noise, emergency vehicles, lighting, et cetera. This project proposes an emergency exit at a dead end that has been in existence for 60 plus years. It was plowed through on December of 2020 with demolition vehicles. There had never been access before. So that's a big concern for us as a neighborhood. We have many small children and people of advanced age that are right at that dead end area. One home has 5 children under the age of 6. The original intention had proposed pedestrian traffic, but I guess they had said tonight that there wouldn't be any pedestrian traffic. We're just wondering, is it possible once the development is completed, can access be obtained, say, through an HOA? I'm not a developer or an architect, but 5 guest spaces, computes to like 1/2 guest space per unit. So it doesn't seem adequate, and we are worried about cut through into the neighborhood, of course. We're concerned that people will park on our streets and use the cut through, if not now, then in the future. We also object to more than one dock, pretty much due to safety concerns and the fact that it is a very small lake. I read on the proposal that there are no motorized boats allowed, and that's great, but at a later date, it also says in the proposal, residents can request motorized boats at a later date to the city commission. I would think that more than one dock would be enticing for motorboats. So for these and the other reasons in our neighborhood letter and those factual reasons based on the codes, we ask that you consider our request, particularly the non-approval of the emergency vehicles or any opening to the Lake Spear Drive neighborhood, and to restore it to the way it was prior to the demolition vehicles having access in 2020. Thank you.
Thank you. Would anybody else in the room, in the public, like to speak? Please step forward.
Hello, my name is Leanna D'Angelo, representative of Mrs. Walton, 1881 Lakespire Drive. I just want to state that, you know, we are in favor of this project. I think that it's a phenomenal concept. I think that it is going to help drive the property values up within the community. And, you know, especially since the pandemic has hit, bringing more residents to Winter Park is going to help hopefully support our local coffee shops, cafes, and other small businesses around, you know, in the area, which I think makes Winter Park home to all of us. So just wanted to state that.
Thank you. Anyone else in the room, public, like to speak? Okay, seeing none, can we go to the online?
First, we have Rick Wilson.
Mr. Wilson?
Oh, there we go. Can you hear me?
We can, thank you. Go ahead.
3 minutes is not nearly long enough.
Sorry about that, that's all you get.
I'll try to be very brief. I have a couple of concerns. First is stormwater. I know Jeff mentioned it was state of the art. I would like to know what is the pollution abatement that you are providing, as well as flood protection. I do not believe there's any flood protection being provided by the stormwater system that is installed. And I would like to know if a St. John's permit is required. Kind of related to that is the finished floor elevation of the units. A lot of times developments will raise the grade around the development so that you have a lot of stormwater flow into adjacent areas. And I'm not quite sure based on the plans, what's gonna happen there. Once again, that's kind of related to flood protection for the existing development as well as everybody else around the area. So that kind of covers the stormwater issue, which I don't think is really, I'm sorry to say, not state of the art, it's just the bare minimum that that's required by Winter Park. when it comes to the fire gate, I'd like to know who is responsible for installing it and maintaining the gate, because whoever is responsible for installing and maintaining will have a key to the gate and can request keys to the gate. Consequently, there can be access by the HOA into Lake Spear if they deem it necessary for whatever reason, emergency or non-emergency. One of the commissioners talked about sanitary sewer. I think this would be quite a vision for the future, for the city to make sure that the pump station is deep enough, the gravity sewer is deep enough that extends close to Lake Spear, and then maybe even extends into Lake Spear. So there was one manhole there so that Lake Spear in the future at its, or at some point can be sewered. As the commissioner noted, it's septic tanks around a lake. It's quite a common retrofit right now within Orange County and other developments and other communities to want to eliminate septic tanks, especially around a lake community. And I think the city would have quite a good vision if they were to take ownership of that pump station and put the manholes in the system deep enough to allow for some kind of future connections. I think that's it. I tried to cover all my concerns. So thank you very much. I appreciate your listening.
Thank you, Mr. Wilson. Next online speaker.
We have Daniel Moore.
Mr. Moore. Mr. Moore, if you're there, go ahead. Mr. Moore, are you on mute?
Yes, he's unmuted.
He's unmuted, okay. I think, why don't we go on to our third online speaker?
It's only two registered, but we do still have 14 attendees. If any attendee would like to speak, you can raise your hand for the feature or press star 9 if you're via phone.
Would anybody else online like to speak?
I'm not seeing any raised hands.
Okay, we will then close the public speaking portion at this point and open it up for board comments.
I kind of have a follow-up question, but it's a civil engineering question.
Sure. Would you like the civil engineer to come up?
Sure. Yep. It's easy. So the ponds, I noticed, have a
wall. Can you state your name real quick? Sorry. Yeah, real quick.
Good evening. Kim Fisher, 1614 White Dove Drive, Winter Springs, 32708. And give me a hard one. Don't leave me with an easy one.
Well, it's a safety concern. It's not clear if there's a fence between this property and the other, but there's some kind of wall around the pond. Is it considered a dry pond only? I'm just worried about a kid getting
in there. And I'm gonna get into what one of the callers, since I'm already up here. It's a dry pond and there's a small retaining wall. It's I believe maximum was 2 feet, so there's not a safety issue. As far as the caller asking for attenuation and pollution abatement for his case, is yes, we do get a St. John's permit as well. Although this one's probably a self-certification. But for the pollution abatement, it's the greater of 1 inch over the entire site area or 2.5 inches of impervious area. So the greater of those two is what we actually have to do a pollution abatement for. That's our water quality. And then the pond is sized for the 25-year storm event. So it actually is sized for flooding, not FEMA's version of a 100-year floodplain, but for the 25-year, 24-hour storm event. So that's a storm event that happens once every 25 years. It equates to approximately 8.6 inches of rainfall in a 24-hour period. Sorry, that was probably more than you wanted to know.
That was what I was curious about. Thank you.
Sorry, you're welcome.
Thank you. Anyone else? Jeff, I had a question for you. Is there recourse? It seems to be a common theme that they're worried about the breaching of the gate, of the emergency gate in the back, and the neighborhood is worried. Is there recourse? Is it a code violation? Is there someone monitoring that if they do see that gate open and they do see non-emergency vehicles going in and out?
They're not going to see that because the HOA is not going to have a key. There isn't anything that needs to come in and out of this site. They can't come in and out on Lakemont Avenue. The only people that are going to have a key is the fire department because they're the only people that need to use that gate.
So there is no access from a tenant or any HOA representative whatsoever?
No, okay. Because you can't have a key out there because there's too many key makers.
Right.
So the fire department is the only one that can hold it.
Mr. Chairman, if I could, Bront Stevenson.
Bront.
What Mr. Briggs is referring to is often known as a Knox box. And that means it has a key that actually the fire department, the local fire department, has their own key made to be placed into the box. So there is not a chance for it to be copied. Even for a master key to be copied, anything like that, it is overseen by the fire marshal, and that way it can't make its way into anybody else's hands over the years.
Thanks for the clarification. I think the people in the neighborhood should really understand that because it seems to
yes,
be
sir.
A common happy to, concern. So that's great.
Happy to help.
We could also put a provision in the covenants or on the plat that indicates that the emergency access is for the city's emergency services only and not as to be used by the HOA or the community. So it's actually a deed restriction or on the plat.
I would like to do that as a condition. Right. I'd like to add that just to make sure that that is enforced. Anything else from the board?
The woman who spoke talked about the potential for motorized craft in the future. I don't really know what the procedure would be for coming to the larger board and asking for that permission. I would like to stipulate now that that is a permanent feature.
Yeah, I was.
That there would be no motorized
craft. Yeah, I heard that as well.
Okay.
Do you have some proposed language for that, Owen? For tonight, or do you want to? How do you want to implement that? I agree with where you're headed. I don't have the language.
It's somewhat akin to the stipulation about the homeowners association. I would just like to make it clear as a requirement here or staff recommendation that the HOA preclude motorized craft as part of its provisions and responsibilities in perpetuity.
Dan, I may ask you to help us with these two as we go into the formation. So,
I'm sorry, this is Bronson interrupting again. I wanted to make sure to give you the proper language. What I would suggest is that key boxes or emergency personnel access boxes shall conform to NFPA requirements. And that's the National Fire Protection Act. That is the codes we use, the city of Winter Park uses and has adopted for fire safety. So that they get updated every couple of years. So this will make sure that when they're updated, that is still in compliance with the NFPA requirements for key boxes.
Okay. Again, I think, Dan, will you be able to put these two conditions in for us as we get to make sure we have the legalese on that?
Sure. I'm trying to keep good notes. I wasn't able to hear everything.
The motorized craft.
The motorized craft that the HOA preclude that as part of its responsibilities and covenants in perpetuity, and that it not be an option that they go to the city commission or city council. We have those restrictions laid.
Okay, understood. I think perhaps the intent of that was to make it clear that the covenant document itself could not be modified.
Correct.
Because, you know, developers often have rights to modify the covenant. So this was actually intended, I believe, by the staff to state that the documents, the deck has to say that the deck cannot be modified by the developer on their own, so, but understood.
Well, I'm going beyond that. It's not just the developer. I think the neighborhood expressed the feel that maybe the HOA acting in concert may try to circumvent that pristine quality by allowing motorized craft. So it's more than the developer, who I think is probably happy leaving them alone so he can sell his units. I'm more concerned about future assigns.
Okay, Dan, I'll let you summarize that. Laura, can you make a motion for us on this? No. Okay.
Ross, I will make a motion, but I'd like to make one comment.
Sure. Oh, yeah, absolutely. I'm sorry. I thought we were done.
There has been some discussion tonight, and this may very well be my last meeting, so I want to get this on the record. There's been some discussion tonight about, you know, the price and the points and the potential buyers of each unit, which I think is certainly of interest to the developer. And as a member of the community, I guess we're all interested in higher value properties. To allay the possible concern of the nearby resident. On the other hand, when we talk about attached product, we're talking about multifamily product. And when we start talking about value and income, I do get concerned that we're planting subliminal messages that that multifamily is not something that we necessarily should approve or endorse. And at least one of my passing gestures will be, if I'm not here on this board, is to try to dispel the notion that an occupied multifamily unit at perhaps a lesser price point is not an appropriate product given the nature of the design and given the nature of the location. And in fact, if this were a different price point and a different product, it would still be eligible for the same conditional use considerations that we're having tonight, absent income or price. So I do want to emphasize that and make it clear that that isn't a part of my decision at all tonight. So with that, I will move that we approve with the modifications that we suggested, both in terms of motorized craft and
the gate.
Oh, and the gate restrictions consistent with fire codes.
Read it as is, and then we'll have Dan fill in the two.
I move that we approve CU number 2102, which is a request of Lake Spear Development LLC for conditional use approval, allowing for the development of 10 new two-story townhouses on the 1.28 acres at 1915 South Lakemont Avenue, currently zoned R2, subject to the additional recommendations of this board and the stipulations and recommendations of staff, adding to those that the key boxes for the gate be in conformance with the NPFA.
I think Owen, he's going to read those. We're going to give these.
You're going to get up that language, and if so.
Sure. Let's start with that. Motorized watercraft are prohibited at the time of platting. The covenants restrictions for the community shall include a provision that prohibit motorized watercraft to be moored or stored or tied to the docks for the community, and a provision that provides that those provisions are enforceable by the city, that there be a deed restriction that provides for emergency access point to be used only by the city's emergency services, including fire. There will be no pedestrian gate, and that the emergency key boxes shall comply with the NEPA requirements.
I'm sorry, NFPA.
NFPA.
Yes, sir.
And that those provisions are will be enforceable by the city. I believe that's it.
Thank you.
Do we have a second?
I'll second that.
Roll call, Mary, please.
Mr. Fitch?
Yes.
Dr. James?
Yes.
Mr. Bornstein?
Yes.
Dr. Beisch?
Yes.
Mr. Spencer?
Yes.
Vice Chair Turner?
Yes.
And Chairman Johnson?
Yes, motion passes unanimously. Thank you. Jeff, ZTA 21-01.
Yes, the next and final item on our agenda today is an ordinance that the board is familiar with because it's one that we've talked about at several work sessions to establish regulations regarding artificial turf. And you know, this is the way the process is supposed to work. Staff brings something to the board. There's vibrant discussion. And there is a much improved modified product when it gets to you for action. And now we specify which kind of turf is pervious and which kind isn't. And it's very clear to anyone reading it what works and what doesn't work. And you, the board, had been content with this at your last work session. This is exactly as shown to you before. So staff continues to recommend approval.
Any questions for staff? We've had a chance for those of you out there or for the record, we've had a chance to review this several times. So I would imagine, yeah, Jim, go ahead.
I don't see any provisions in this for after installation monitoring. And we know that if it's not maintained, it becomes impervious and fails to drain. And it seems to me that provision ought to be in this.
There is on the third page, number C, the property owner shall routinely maintain, blah, blah, blah. And so there is a provision on the maintenance, also in the section ahead of that. Prior to installation, they have to enter into an agreement, a form acceptable to the city. It's going to run with title of the property. This is going to assign scheduled maintenance activities and annual reports thereto to the city. So we do have.
Where are you reading it?
So on the ordinance, on the very bottom of page 2, starts at number 5.
Oh, item C, maintenance of artificial turf.
And then maintenance of artificial on page 3. Yes, those two sections, the maintenance and the one above it. Because this is public works. Number one need is to make sure these things are maintained.
But there's no time on it.
Time?
Routinely maintained.
I'm sorry, I missed
that. Time intervals. How frequently does someone need to maintain the turf?
That's a detail in the agreement. And I do not know, because I'm not Public Works, whether this is annual, but it does talk about annual reports thereof to the city. So I suspect the maintenance is on an annual basis.
I would think it may be dependent on the installer as well and the type of turf being installed. So it may be something that is recommended by the company who makes the installation.
Yeah, you might want to be cautious about putting a one size fits all, because the different products may have different types of maintenance requirements. So I think that level of detail would go in the agreement contemplated by this provisions.
Right. Jim, anything else?
No.
That's it. Okay. Any other questions for staff? Okay. At this point, I'd like to open it up to the public. Is there anyone online?
We have 8 attendees still online. If anyone would like to speak, please use the raise hand feature. Or if you're participating by phone, please press star 9. I have Leticia Valerio.
Ms. Valerio, are you there? Ms. Valerio?
Can you hear me?
Yes, there you are. We can hear you.
Yes, I think that the going back to the issue of non-motorized craft should apply to...
Ms. Valerio, I'm sorry. We've closed that issue. We're on to an ordinance on artificial turf. The discussion around the previous item has been closed.
Okay.
I apologize. You may not have seen the transition or because you're online, but we have moved on. So that is closed and we can't take any more comment on that at this time.
All right.
I apologize.
No problem.
Is there anyone else online that would like to discuss the artificial turf ordinance by the city of Winter Park?
There's no other hands raised.
Okay. We will close the public portion and open it up for board comments at this point in time. Again, we've seen this several times. Does anyone have anything they'd like to discuss here? I think Jim's point's valid. It's just hard to quantify right now as the regular maintenance schedule. I know when the grass I put in is required and we have that put in and they pull it up and they redo the all the stuff underneath it. So, but I don't think one size fits all. So it's probably inside of the installer's agreement. Okay. Michael, can you make a motion on this?
Sure. Move to approve ZTA 21-01, request City of Winter Park for an ordinance to amend the zoning code to establish regulations for artificial turf, including definitions, standards for pervious artificial turf, and maintenance requirements.
Do we have a second?
I'll second it.
Roll call, please, Mary.
Mr. Bornstein?
Yes.
Dr. Beich?
Yes.
Mr. Fitch?
Yes.
Mr. Spencer?
Yes.
Dr. James?
Yes.
Vice Chair Turner?
Yes.
And Chairman Johnson?
Yes. Ordinance passes unanimously. Thank you.
Next month's meeting looks easy. I think it's going to be a few lakefronts. We don't have anything else. And see if Brontz has any planning director comments.
No, I would just remind everybody that we have a city commission vote coming up, so make sure you get out to vote next week. And if you have any questions on any of any projects that have come before you and where they've gone, I'd be happy to get into those. So I will provide information you would like to hear.
Bronze, what's our next work session on the 23rd? Is that the are we getting up on annexation or where what are we doing?
I'm not sure actually. I'd have to look. We have a board. We kind of keep everything on, and I can't remember unless Allison or Mary can remember what we've got for next month.
Okay, just send out a note to us if you can to remind us.
Oh, yeah, you bet.
Allison's got it. Oh, I'm sorry, there you are.
Yeah, right now it's open if you have any suggestions.
Okay.
Work session topics.
Okay. And if it remains open, they'll send out a note to cancel it.
Yep.
We have discussed the dynamics of annexation as just a general topic, but that the commission had had that presentation. Can we get that?
Sure. Yeah. I think we briefly touched on it before, you know, the POCO.
I would like to ask the board to vote on that because it's their time. It's the middle of the day. Sure. Are you interested in the potential properties and the dynamics behind annexation, behind fire, police, school, taxation, and annexation? I am. I have been for a while. I think it would be a worthwhile hour if we can keep it to an hour.
Sure.
Michael, you all right with that? Okay. Can we get that scheduled for the 23rd?
Yes.
Everybody,
and we will probably have Mr. Briggs leading that conversation. He knows that like the back of his hand, and potentially Mr. Langley as well.
Awesome, thank you guys. That's it. I think we're good. We'll be back here again on the other side of the election, April 6th, at least one more time as a collective board, I believe.
I believe so.
Oh, yes, okay. As I understand it. Anything else? Okay, we are adjourned.
Now it's pretty true. I thought the work session would be the last one. So, yeah, I'm saying to you, I can't believe the commission voted for my plan. We're the same group that wouldn't give the Henderson.